Get started this morning. There has certainly been a lot of work done looking at the germination of annual weeds, different models that have been presented and developed. And so as we looked at this for Michigan, wanted to just show you how we were trying to both maybe validate some things that have been done and then add to what has been done, looking at some of the suggestions done by some prior research. Certainly, you understand that the seed production of annual grasses is very, very important. And for something like annual bluegrass or crabgrass in particular, that has to start over each year as a summer annual. And so the seed bank and production from seed is quite important. As we have development of some new herbicide products, dithiapyr is not so new, but things that have pre-post activity, and now with tenacity or mesotrione, being able to accurately predict that germination window could give us some other options as we look at lawn care operators maybe looking to switch over from a pre-only to a pre-post approach as they get into the latter part of their clients in the later part of the summer or later part of the spring, or also being able to switch over for that last number of new clients that might come in. And so we wanted to look at, can we accurately predict that germination pulse and link the germination to readily available weather network data. And so in Michigan, we have a network of 83 weather stations across the state, and those weather stations all collect the same weather data. And so it would be convenient for us to be able to associate somebody's location with the closest weather station and link that to readily available weather data. Annual bluegrass would traditionally be considered a winter annual grass, particularly as you move into warmer parts of northern America. In Michigan, we have certainly perennialized a lot of annual bluegrass through irrigation and fertilizer and fungicide use. Conventional wisdom would have that annual bluegrass would have a fall germination pulse with its history as a winter annual. And so if you look at some research that's been done either in Louisiana or Tennessee, Maryland, out in California, they have a very predictable fall germination pulse of annual bluegrass. In Michigan, we've seen that it's been reported that we have both a fall and a spring pulse, and so more of a bimodal response. And conventional wisdom is also that the dormancy of annual bluegrass is conferred by the parents. And so there's plenty of research out there that would tend to lead us to think that plants that grow in an environment where dormancy is not an advantage are going to very quickly give progeny that have seeds that do not have dormancy as an advantage. So, for instance, in an irrigated site, you would expect to have seeds that do not have dormancy as conferred by the parents, where in an unirrigated rough, you would expect that to have primary dormancy that's released by the heat of the summer, and then when you get conditions conducive for germination in the fall, you get that predictable pulse. In the interest of actually not talking for an hour this morning, I'm going to focus on our smooth crabgrass work that we did as part of this study. Smooth crabgrass is a very important summer annual grass in Michigan. Pretty much as you move maybe north from Cincinnati, crabgrass becomes more important than goosegrass for us. And as you move up into the northern parts of Michigan, some of the climate is really not even conducive for crabgrass. But certainly, spring germination as a summer annual, and seeing that this has primary dormancy that inhibits fall germination, which is then released through cooler temperatures of the winter. And then if you had, for whatever reason, seeds that were not germinated, they could go into secondary dormancy through the following summer. Those plants might last anywhere from 1 to 6, or those seeds might last anywhere from 1 to 6 years, but it's pretty short time in the soil. Probably more than 80% of the seeds would go on an annual basis. So there's plenty of examples of linking smooth crabgrass germination to soil temperature, seeing ranges anywhere from 10 to 25 C or 15 to 22 C, some that have been reported. And those depths are anywhere from maybe 2.5 to 5 centimeters. A lot of our weather stations, unfortunately, measure soil temperature over like a 0 to 4 inch depth. And certainly the seed that we're interested in is going to be more in the top, maybe 1 to 2 centimeters. Also, if you look like in the Anderson's Guide to Growing, Anderson's Guide to Growing Weeds, talks about diurnal temperature cycling. So if you look at air temperatures and you're getting swings of maybe 10 or 15 or 20 degrees between the maximum and minimum air temperature, those types of conditions are very conducive to germination. And regardless of different ranges, you can get very consistent germination when those diurnal cycling events are present. There's environmental timing, where emergence of smooth crabgrass is linked to forsythia flowering, or the withering of that, or dogwood bud break, and then also looking at either air or soil growing degree days. Fidanza looked at a base temperature for soil growing degree days of 12 degrees. Myers had Myers and his group presented a soil base of 9 degrees, and so. Another thing that came out of the Fidanza article and the Myers article was saying that could they improve their prediction of this if they somehow incorporated soil moisture? And looking at things like hydrothermal time or available water in the soil profile. And so in our objectives, we wanted to look at using, again, weather that we could gather from our weather network and improve the growing degree day model through associating that with some minimum critical photo period, maybe calculating available soil moisture, incorporating that as part of the model, either the number or the occurrence of diurnal temperature cycling, again, looking for something like a 10 degree swing between minimum and maximum air temperature, and the occurrence of freezing dates. And our thought there was, crabgrass being a C4 grass, it's typically it'll end its life cycle in the fall when you get a frost event. And I remember when I took a weeds class, we talked about maybe not fretting so much about some of that early germinating crabgrass that happens in the spring, because you're likely to get maybe a freezing event that'll take those out. And so that was something else that we wanted to consider. We had two sites that were both located in generally the same latitude. One was in East Lansing at our turfgrass research farm. It was a non-irrigated lawn height site that had less than 10 years of continuous turf. Before that, it was in corn production. So that one had somewhat of a mix between large and smooth crabgrass. It was kind of interesting to see that area transition over to smooth from large once we started maintaining it under turf. Had 0 to 48 kilograms of nitrogen 1 year. Obviously, we fertilized, the other year we did not. 6 centimeter height. The second site was at a cemetery located a couple miles directly west of our turfgrass research farm. About 25 years continuous turf there, a little bit taller mowing height, but both sites are areas that we use regularly for our crabgrass studies that we conduct at Michigan State. We established some observation circles similar to what Tom Carlson did for all of his annual bluegrass germination work. So we had 8 80-centimeter circles at those two locations, and what we would do is we would observe the number of germinates that were in, number of seedlings that were in 4 of those 8 circles at any given observation date. And then those were chemically rogued at that point, and 7 days later we would observe the number of seedlings that were present in the other 4 circles. Okay, and then those were chemically rogued. And so we would go between those two. We collected soil probe temperature just so that we could see, just so we could sort of ground truth how well our soil probe was doing on our weather station that was not at the site at the time. It was about probably, I think it was about 3 kilometers away in between both of these sites. So just to describe that, I know that you guys probably all understood what I was talking about, but if not, I like drawing pictures, and so I got to play with some drawing of pictures. We had our 8 circles established. The first observation date, which would be 7 days later, keep in mind this would be early in the spring, so it's likely that this was zero at this point. We observed 4 of those circles. We were using glufosinate, or Finale, to spray those circles. We have an aluminum ring that we put over that, spray into those. Come back at the next observation date, and we would observe the circles on the other side. And so each time you're observing those 4 circles, they've had 14 days since the last time they have been observed, but we're observing every 7 days, all right? And then, again, using removing those chemically each time. I already described our Michigan Agriculture Weather Network, and the station that we used was about 3 kilometers from the site. We're collecting air temperature, soil temperature, precipitation, looked at evapotranspiration and day length, the precipitation, the evapotranspiration, and our Ingham County Soil Survey book is what helped us establish. We used field capacity as of March 1st, thinking with the snow melt coming in, and then based our calculations for soil moisture off of that for amount of incoming precipitation and evapotranspiration. We also generated weather-based variables from that, so our growing degree days with a base temperature of 0, growing degree days with a base temperature of 12, and then I'm calling our growing degree days of soil, I'm calling those SDD, just so that we can keep those separate in our discussion here. Soil degree days with a base temperature of 12. The Myers article used a base temperature of 9, so my numbers will be a little bit less, but will be the same as like what Mike Fidanza did. And our calculations started on March 1st. We also calculated average soil temperatures at from that 0 to 5 centimeter depth, and we used a rolling average of either 7 days or 14. So you'll see one called Soil 7, and you'll see one called Soil 14. Very similar if you were down yesterday looking at some of the dollar spot prediction, how they're using some rolling averages there for relative humidity and for temperature. Similar thing here. And then our soil moisture status would be available water of today is equal to yesterday's available water minus evapotranspiration plus precipitation. And then our percentage was figured by dividing that by what the available water would be for field capacity. And so try to monitor if we had soil temperatures that were appropriate but didn't get germination, could we link that to dry conditions? And then freeze days, looking at if air temperature was less than 0, then the freeze day was counted as yes. Okay, it took me a long time, weeks of trying to figure out, now how would we determine a freeze day? And just scouring, seeing what had been done to determine freezing, had water, you know, putting it in different, no, okay, sorry. Not supposed to be funny when you're freeze 14. Was a rolling sum of how many freeze days occurred in the last 14 days, and then a freeze binary, which was, did we get a freeze day in the last 14? And so that was just a yes, no, all right? Diurnal temperature cycling, again, did we get a greater than 10 degree swing from max and min? How many of those days occurred in the last 14, and did we have any days in the last 14? A little bit of throwing the kitchen sink at it here. And if we look at our mean smooth crabgrass germination in 2001, we see that you have air temperature and soil temperature located down below here. I've put it on months just because that's easy for us to think about. And if I put ordinal days of 0 through 365, then you're all having to figure out, okay, 30 days has November and figure out where we're at on that. So that gives you an idea for 2001. Up above, you have percent germination, and so that would be the amount of germination that happened on any given observation date. So you can see like 15%, 25%, 15%, all right? And you see that we pretty much got a pulse in the spring and then didn't have anything as you went through the rest of the summer and into the fall, which is about what you would expect for crabgrass. And so that was not entirely shocking. The soil temperature and air temperature bounds I put down there, I have one at 13 and one at 23 with the dotted lines going across, just to give you an idea of those values that have been previously reported. Okay. In 2002, this was really exciting for us because we couldn't have 2 years that were more different. 2002, it took a really long time to get germination. Does that mean I have 10 minutes left? Is that what that is?
15.
Oh, 15 left. All right, that's good. That you see, it was about 5 weeks later, okay? And so this is really good, particularly as we're looking at doing a model to fit that, you know, what was happening that would cause 5 weeks later germination. So if we look at degree day accumulation from 2001 and 2002, our first germination, first emergence happened between around 500 to 550 at our base zero, or 600 to 700 at our base zero for 2002. That soil degree day number was 50 to 70, or 80 to 115. 50% emergence happened around 800 or 875 on the base zero. The soil temperature base was 150 in both years. Our 90% emergence date was 1300 and 1900, or 440 and 665 on the soil degree days. Okay, our first emergence by average soil temperature using that rolling 7 day temp was 15 or 16.8 or 15.9 and 15.3 for the rolling 14 day temperature. Okay, so what does this all mean? Well, during the emergence period, from the time you observe emergence to the time you get to about 97% emergence, it's essentially linear. And so if you look at that that portion, we had all the variables that were considered for inclusion. If they didn't describe at least 15% of the variation, then they were not included as we went through our model selection. And it ended up fairly simple, all the wrangling we did for soil moisture and everything else, we ended up with growing degree day worked better for us than the soil degree days did, and the soil 14 worked better than the soil 7. And so we ended up with a pretty good fit, not maybe as high as some other that had been reported of around 0.8, or not around, 0.87, although it was somewhat longer, truncated that. And you can see here that the blue line slash blocks would be our observed, averaged over both years, and the red would be the predicted. And it's a reasonable fit, but what's happening in the springtime? Why would we have predicted germination happening before we actually observe it? Probably because soil temperatures and growing degree days are appropriate, but maybe we had the occurrence of some freeze days. So we added some Boolean logic to our model, saying that if there was a freeze day in the last 14, then the result of the model is zero. If there was not a freeze model, or if there's not a freeze day in the last 14, then the result of the model was the model, okay? And then we also said, oh, and by the way, if you're at 100% germination, that's good enough. You don't need to go to 120 or 130. And so for looking at that, we add freeze days in there, and you see that for both years, then the model does a very, very nice job of predicting when that occurs, or at least telling you when that occurs. Because from a predictive model, this is no good for putting down a pre-emergence. But if I'm wanting to reduce the overall amount of pesticide that I'm applying, if I'm wanting to target apply areas that don't have a history of crabgrass, I'm wanting to address some sites that are later in the spring, maybe my last 25% of my clients, this could be a very nice way to predict when to make that switch over to something like Tenacity or Dimension to be able to go out and get that pre-post, particularly with Tenacity, which probably doesn't have that pre-emergence residual that's going to give us 10 to 12 weeks. It's going to be something shorter than that. Maybe you could do it without getting a repeat application. All right, so soil temperature plus, or growing degree days plus soil temperature improved our prediction. And in our hands, soil moisture was a lot of calculations and wrangling, but it ended up not being, for these 2 years, very helpful. And temperature cycling was not a good indicator as well. The freezing events ended up being pretty cool to help bring that into line for us in both years. Remember, that was a 5 week difference between germination in the 2 years, and we were able to have an accurate prediction for both. And if you'd like to talk to me about the annual bluegrass germination, I'd be happy to do that. And I promise next time I'll do an abstract for just one talk and not two.